All right, congratulations. It is Friday. It is 5 p.m. You have made it through the working week, and it is time for American Hit Radio. Lucky me. Glad to have you aboard with me right now. I'm Tom Ryan. I'm your host. I am right now flying solo, hoping that Heidi will make it in a little bit. Again, preoccupied, but maybe she'll be able to join me as the show takes place. We've been, of course, on Fridays, we call the show How Music Changed, where we look at some of the most important artists and events that have basically formed our musical world, what basically caused music to become what it is now. And channel 146, or part 146 out of 250 that we're covering, has been dedicated to Simon and Garfunkel. This is part 13 in our series, dedicated to Simon and Garfunkel. This show in particular is going to focus exclusively on Paul Simon, and we are in the mid-80s. This show is going to focus exclusively on one album, which is the album Graceland. But before we get to that, I've got a lot of history that I want to cover to get us to that point. So let me catch us up by reading a few excerpts from Mark Elliott's book called Paul Simon, A Life, to put things in perspective so we can get to the music. The idea took shape in the last days of 1983 at Paul's home in Amagansett, right here on Long Island. Following a small 12-city solo acoustic tour to promote his previous album, Hearts and Bones, he greeted the end of the old year and the arrival of the new one, doing little else but staring for hours at ocean waves and contemplating the darkest events of his recent past. This is how Paul himself remembered his state of mind during that time period. "It was a difficult time for me. I had started to work on an album that became Hearts and Bones. Then I did the reunion concert with Art, and 500,000 people showed up, and we decided to go out and do some concerts. Just a classic mistake. Then my new album came out that had been announced as a Simon and Garfunkel album, only as a solo album. I was exhausted. I didn't do anything to promote it, and it flopped. In the midst of all that, I got married to Carrie Fisher. What was I thinking? All kinds of mistakes on top of mistakes on top of mistakes. So now I had a personal blow, a career setback, and the combination of the two put me into a tailspin. I was building a house in Montauk on Long Island, and while I would drive out to the site, I would listen to this tape that a friend had given me, and I began to realize that I really liked that tape. After a couple of weeks of driving back and forth to the house, I began to wonder, what is this? It's my favorite tape now. I wonder who it is on this. And that's when things started to perk up. Paul asked Warner Brothers to track down the band on the bootleg cassette that his friend had given him. It was actually one of the players who was on the Saturday Night House Band named Heidi Berg. The only thing that he knew about the music was its unusual title, Gumboots, Accordion Jive Hits, Volume 2, and he wanted to find out who the band was. Someone at Warner came back with the information that it was a South African vocal group called Ladysmith Black Mambazo, who specialized in what was called Bakamba, or Township Jive, and that Ladysmith Black Mambazo had been founded in the 60s by Joseph Shabalala and was still in South Africa. Ladysmith, by the way, was the name of Shabalala's rural hometown. Black is a reference to oxen, the strongest of all farm animals, and Mambazo is the Zulu word for axe, representing the group's ability to chop down or cut any singing rival who might challenge them. Now, he wanted to dig deeper into the origins of this sound, so he made plans to travel to Soweto to meet with the members of Ladysmith Black Mambazo and possibly record with them. Paul also asked Roy Haley, his producer, to accompany him on the journey. He was about to leave for South Africa when he received a conference call from Quincy Jones and a few other people. They wanted Paul to participate in this massive gathering of the cream of American musicians to record the Michael Jackson Lionel Richie song, We Are the World. They called their project USA for Africa and hoped to feature it more than a dozen of the biggest names in American music, including Jackson, Richie, and Harry Belafonte. They also pulled in people, as we know, Stevie Wonder, Diana Ross, Ray Charles, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan. Paul agreed to participate and postponed his trip to South Africa to finish the song. To show their appreciation for his help, Quincy Jones and Harry Belafonte agreed to help Paul work out the final details for his upcoming February trip to Soweto. By now he knew He had to carefully tiptoe around the long-standing United Nations Anti-Apartheid Committee, whose cultural boycott had effectively prevented other performers from playing to segregated audiences in South Africa. From the moment Paul and Roy stepped onto South African soil, there was a groundswell of criticism for Paul's having made the trip. Why hadn't he gone to Zimbabwe instead? Why wasn't he interested in exiled South African musicians? Was he a racist? Paul's response to all of this was simple, honest, and direct. He said he was essentially not on any political mission, just a working musician in search of a good sound, and in order to get it, he had to go to where it was, not where people wanted it to be. Having settled in Johannesburg, he and Haley went to the Ovation Studios to work with local groups of musicians. And in between sessions, sometimes the musicians would show Paul around the poorer sections of Soweto. As Roy Haley recalled, these were originally jams, 10 or 15 minutes, half an hour. Lo and behold, maybe a song would come out of that. The important thing for us to do there was to record these guys in a way that when we got back to New York, we could edit it. The 2 weeks of sessions in Soweto resulted in a sweeping revitalization of Paul's musical energies. As he later put it, they finished my disappointments and sorrows. Now he felt once more musically invincible, that nothing could bring him back down, not even his name was now suddenly being added to the UN blacklist for deliberately disregarding a boycott, or when the African National Congress voted to officially ban him, despite the fact that he had turned down an invitation to play a concert at Sun City, the highly segregated South African resort for Africa's wealthy whites. So he's getting attacked politically on all sides. Paul had six tracks of rough studio gems when he returned to New York City, music that would form the heart of his next album. Working with pen and pencil in Long Island, he tried to put words to the strands of music that he had taken out of Africa, a slower process than he anticipated, but for Paul, everything seemed to go slowly. He was a very deliberate writer. He eventually brought to the studio with him other musicians whose music he liked and who he thought could help him refine and polish the sound that he was searching for. One track was done with the upcoming East L.A. group Los Lobos. He brought That Was Your Mother. He recorded That Was Your Mother with Rockin' Dupsy and the Zydeco Twisters out of New Orleans. Now, what made this long and slow creative process possible was the fact that by now, Warner Brothers could not have cared less about Paul Simon, his project, or anything else that he might have been doing. As far as the corporate suits at Warner Brothers were concerned, he had proved to be a bad investment. His last two albums bombed, so the label at this point more or less wrote him off as a has-been, believing that he was no longer worth any more of their time, attention, or money. According to Paul, that was probably a good thing. I had one big advantage being as cold as I was. Nobody was paying attention to me. I can do all this very privately. Nobody's checking on how the tracks are going. Can you send them to us? Can we come hear it? Nobody cared. As Roy Haley put it, they thought that Roy Haley and Paul Simon were out of their minds. I know they thought we were both nuts. Haley was right. Here's what Warner Brother executive actually said about this period, about Paul Simon. He had come to us already as a has-been. No one seemed to want to admit it because all the executives at the time were baby boomers, children of the 60s, and to them, Paul wasn't, always would be a god. But he didn't sell records. Every time he went out, Columbia released his old catalog, remixed and repackaged, and made him all the money. Warner at the time had Prince, who was a big deal. He got all the attention and he had all the heat. He was sexy and a great performer. Paul wasn't. Prince was difficult, but he could afford to be difficult because he was selling records. And of course, our biggest act was Madonna. She was the epitome of now, the present and the future. Paul was, to the label, stuck forever in the folk music drought of the 60s. There was no way he could compete for the record-buying audience whose age range was, for the most part, 15 to 23-year-olds. That's why no one cared when he went to Africa. He could have gone to the moon and it wouldn't have made any difference to us, except he would have had to have paid his own way. Here's the opening track from the album that became Graceland called Boy in the Bubble.
The sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. There was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. There was a dry wind, and it swept across the desert and curled into the circle of blue. And the dead sand falling on the children, the mothers and the fathers and the automatic earth. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle. Wonder and don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. It's a turnaround jump shot, it's everybody jump start. It's every generation throws a hero up the pop charts. Medicine is magical and magical is art. Think of the boy in the bubble and the baby with the babbling heart. And I believe these are days of lasers in the jungle. Lasers in the jungle somewhere. Staccato signals of constant information. A loose affiliation of millionaires and billionaires and babies. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in the corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry.
One of the songs that came directly out of Paul's trip to Africa called The Boy in the Bubble, that he had caused some incredibly dark imagery for. It's a very powerful opening track for any sort of an album, but full of, like, basically, you know, bombs and baby carriages and all sorts of things, you know, universes dying in the corner of the sky. And yet somehow there's like a sense of hope that underlies it all. It's a really very interesting lyrical opening, no matter for any sort of an album, but especially an album which is going to be as musically challenging as this proved to be and as instantly successful. Talk about how wrong the people at Warner Brothers could have been about Paul Simon's destiny. Now, as he was writing the songs and dealing with what was, you know, the tapes that he had, one phrase that he had stuck in his head that he especially liked and considered as the title for the album and for one of its songs had a theme. It was about driving through wasteland, starting with this allusion to T.S. Eliot's epic poem of life's bleak despair, not unlike The Boy in the Bubble, the song that we just heard. All at once, Paul hit upon a single sentence or a half a sentence that pulled the whole album together. It was a simple but a deeply profound change to the whole project. Not driving through wasteland, but going to Graceland. That was it. It was that. Now we understood that the idea of a physical journey that had, you know, had been the right one to search for the roots of the music that he loved best. And but the spiritual direction wasn't about necessarily going to Africa, but he could tie it into maybe going to Memphis. Here's Graceland.
shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland, Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland. Poor boys and pilgrims with families, and we are going to Graceland. My traveling companion is 9 years old. He is the child of my first marriage. And I've reason to believe we both will be received in Graceland. She comes back to tell me she's gone. If I didn't know that, as if I didn't know my own bed, as if I'd never noticed the way she brushed her hair from her forehead. And she said, losing love is like a window in your heart. Everybody sees you're blown apart. Everybody sees the wind blow. Poor boys and pilgrims with families, and we are going to Graceland. And my traveling companions are ghosts in empty sockets. I'm looking at ghosts and empties. But I've reason to believe we all will be received in Graceland. There is a girl in New York City who calls herself a human trampoline. Sometimes when I'm falling, flying, tumbling in turmoil, I say, whoa, so this is what she means. She means we're bouncing into Graceland. And I see losing love is like a window in your heart. Well, everybody sees your blow. Everybody feels the wind blow. Ooh, in Graceland, I'm going to Graceland. For reasons I cannot explain, there's some part of me wants to see Graceland. And I may be obliged to defend every love, every ending, or maybe there's no obligations now. Maybe I'm a reason.
I think that stands out pretty much as an obvious work of genius, doesn't it? What an amazing song that is. It's odd that you don't hear other people doing it in one sense, but then again, there is a reason for that. It's not an easy song to play. American instrumentalists just really don't have that feel. That bass guitar on that song is unlike anything I've heard on an American record ever. Same thing with the electric guitar. It's just a totally different way of approaching the instrument, and it's rather stunning. Paul really, you can see why he was totally enamored with what was coming out, with what he had gotten out of Africa, and maybe why that tape had amazed him. Now, when the record finally does come out, its release was quickly felt. Graceland, both the album and the single, didn't just cue Paul's comeback. It became his moment of true musical greatness. It took its place alongside, obviously, songs like Sound of Silence, Bridge of Troubled Water, The Boxer, all of a sudden Paul Simon's solo career meant as much as the time that he had spent with Simon and Garfunkel. As it says in the book by Mark Elliott, Paul Simon Alive, Graceland had been quietly released by Warner Brothers on September 1st, 1986, after all the supposedly great summer albums were already out and before the new fall records were ready for release. But much to the label's surprise, Graceland jumped onto Billboard's top album chart at number 3, number 1 in England and Australia, and looked as if it could stay on the charts forever. It went platinum 5 times and eventually sold over 14 million copies worldwide. And still selling, by the way. Let's play a few tracks in a row so we can make sure we get as much as in. Let's just let the rest of side one run for a while.
She thought I was all right, all right in a sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, "Don't I know you from the cinematographer's party?" I said, "Who am I to blow against the wind? I know what I know. I've said what I've said. We come and we go. That's the thing that I keep in the back of my head. I know what I know. I've said what I've said. It really reminds me of money. She was the kind of girl that could say things that weren't that funny. I said, "What does that mean? I really remind you of money." She said, "Oh, who am I to blow against the wind? I know what I know. I've seen what I've said. We come and we go. That's the thing that I keep." You the woman who was recently given a Fulbright. She said, "Don't I know you from the cinematographer's party?" I said, "Who am I to blow against the wind? I know what I know. I'll say what I've said. In a taxi heading downtown, rearranging my position on this friend of mine who had a little bit of a breakdown. I said, "Hey, you know, breakdowns, common breakdowns go, so what are you gonna do about it?" That's what I'd like to know. "You don't feel you could love me, but I feel you could." It was in the early morning hours when I fell into a phone call. believing I had supernatural powers, I slammed into a brick wall. I said, hey, is this my problem? Is this my fault? If that's the way it's gonna be, I wanna call the whole thing to a halt. You don't feel you could love me, but I feel you could.
You don't feel you could love me, but I feel you.
You don't feel you could love me, but I feel you. When I thought I heard this voice say, hey, ain't we walking down the same street together on the very same day? I said, hey, senorita, that's astute. I said, why don't we get together and call ourselves an institute? You don't feel you could love me, but I feel you could.
You don't feel you could love me, but I feel you.
You don't feel you could love me, but I feel you could.
You don't feel you could love me.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. 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 Say she's crazy, she got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of your shoes. She was physically forgotten, but then she slipped into my pocket with my car keys. She said, you've taken me for granted because I please you. Wearing these diamonds. And I could say, ooh, ooh, as if everybody knows what I'm talking about. As if everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Sign of a wave. The poor boy changes clothes and he puts on aftershave to compensate for his ordinary shoes. He She said, honey, take me dancing, but they ended up by sleeping in a doorway by the bodegas and the lights on over Broadway, wearing diamonds on the soles of their shoes. And I could say, ooh, everybody, you would know what I was talking about. I mean, everybody, you would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about I got diamonds on the soles of my shoes, yeah. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of my shoes.
One thing to remember about this album, I mean, thinking that this came out in 1986, this is a year that music was probably more stratified and cut into more styles than maybe ever before in that time period. So it was almost ridiculous. If you put out a record, it was almost decided what market you were going to be put in before the record was even released. And there was about maybe 20 different markets. So the thing that was so amazing about this record, about Graceland, is that it seemed to basically reach into every one of those markets. I don't remember knowing a single person that didn't love this album. It was one of those albums that everybody agreed was a great record. It was just easy to play at a party or play for friends, because there was like it didn't seem that there was anybody who took issue with it at all. It just basically suited the tastes of, or actually it challenged the taste of a lot of people. In a way that was very positive, because it sounded new and fresh. We didn't really know much yet at this point. Most of us didn't really know African rhythms. You got to give people like Paul Simon and Peter Gabriel are probably the two people most singularly responsible for turning us on to what was eventually what we would call world music. In a way, it was a reintroduction to music of other cultures. Something that sort of faded with the advent of rock and roll. I mean, before rock and roll, there was a lot of music from Polynesia that people were listening to, and there was, you know, the music from Spain. I remember there were ethnic things that were happening on the radio and in I guess you could say what was the generation before mine that all got pushed away with the advent of rock and roll, and this is the album that more or less began to bring it back and turn things around. Now, the first single that was released from the album, Graceland, it was called You Can Call Me Al, of course. That was released a little bit ahead of the album. Paul likely got the title from something he overheard at a party he hosted, where he met the conductor and composer Pierre Boulez for the first time. As he was leaving, Boulez called Simon Al, and the humor of the situation stuck in his head. He released the tune with an MTV-friendly video that co-starred Paul with his good friend Chevy Chase. Here is that hit single, You Can Call Me Al.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot at redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away, my well-lit door. Just a beer belly, beer belly. Get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty. Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al. A man walks down the street. He says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention. And oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty.
Na 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 Joseph's face was black as night. The pale yellow moon shone in his eyes. His path was marked by the stars in the southern hemisphere, and he walked his days under Africa's skies. This is the story of how we begin to remember. This is the powerful pulsing of love in the vein. After the dream of falling and calling your name out, these are the roots of rhythm, and the roots of rhythm remain.
Be able to recognize that that's Linda Ronstadt singing harmony with Paul on that track. Also, earlier in the album, although it usually goes unnoted, probably because their role seems to be greatly diminished on the track, the Everly Brothers are credited for singing background on the title track of the album, Graceland, which is interesting. That's Paul's Heroes. But there's so much going on that I guess that's just like a side note. Now, there's two more songs left that are African-based. Everything on the album up until this point more or less came out of the African sessions. That leaves us with two songs after that that did not, the only two that did not. But let's continue then with the two that did come out of Africa. Of course, the other great number that features Ladysmith Black Mambazo from the album, this beautiful song called Homeless.
Homeless, homeless, moonlight sleep you wanna make night lake. Homeless, homeless, moonlight sleep you wanna make night lake. Homeless,
we are
homeless, the moonlight sleep you wanna make night lake. There'll be a homeless, homeless, homeless. Boom, 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 moonlight's creeping on a midnight lake. See all your, 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 see all your,
somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing, somebody cry,
why, why.
Somebody sing, somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody sing, somebody cry, why. Somebody sing.
Hit your man up, hit your man up, yes, I know, I know.
Somebody say, somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say, somebody cries,
why.
Somebody say, somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say, somebody cry, why.
Kulumane,
kulumane, kulumane siswe.
Singenze njani,
bayajabula basithanda. Yo.
Charlie the Archangel sloped into the room. He said, I have no opinion about this, and I have no opinion about that. Sad as a lonely little wrinkled balloon. He said, well, I don't claim to be happy about this, boys, and I don't seem to be happy about that. I don't want no part of your love. I don't want no part of this crazy love. I don't want no part of your love. I don't want no part of this crazy love. I don't want no part of your love. I don't want no part of this crazy love. I don't want no part. She knows about jokes this time, the joke is on me. Well, I have no opinion about that, and I have no opinion about me. Somebody could walk into this room and say your life is on fire. It's all over the evening news, all about the fire in your life on the evening news.
says, well, this'll eat up a year of my life. And then there's all of that weight to be lost. She says, the joke is on me. I say, the joke is on me. I said, I have no opinion about that. Well, we'll just have to wait and confirm. I don't want no part of your love. I don't want no part of this crazy love. I don't want no part of your love. I don't want no part of this crazy love. I don't want no part of your love. I don't want no part of this crazy love.
The album. If the album was to end there, that would have been a fully African album. All nine tracks up to this point, basically coming from Paul's time in Africa. But there's two more tracks remaining on the album. It should be noted that when he was out, when he did appear on Saturday Night Live after this album was released, he would perform with Joseph Shabalala and Ladysmith Black Mambazo on Saturday Night Live. They would do Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes. Later on, he would do the song again. At the 1986 Grammy Awards, where the album, not to nobody's surprise, actually won for Album of the Year, quite deservedly so, and which I find almost ironic, or at least sad, really. In January 1987, the United Nations and the African National Congress finally saw fit to officially remove Paul Simon's name from their blacklists. And a week later, he won the British music industry's annual Best International Solo Artist Award. It took them, I wonder what would have happened if the album wasn't popular, if that could have happened. Well, anyway, let's play the two remaining tracks, or one of the two remaining tracks. Let's play this one first. From Heidi's hometown, New Orleans, Louisiana, Rockin' Dupsy and the Zydeco Twisters. I knew the old man. I actually met this old man back in the late 80s and the early 90s when they were playing. And I actually spoke for a while at length with his son, David, who eventually took over the band, David Dupsy. But I think it went on. No, I think the band still exists, but I think it's being run by a younger brother. But here they are back in their prime when Daddy was playing the accordion. This is a song called That Was Your Mother.
I was still single and life was great. I held this job as a traveling salesman that kept me moving from state to state. Well, I'm standing on the corner of Lafayette, state of Louisiana, wondering where a city boy could go to get a little conversation, drink a little red wine, catch a little bit of those Cajun girls dancing the Zydeco. Christmas Day, I said, good gracious, can this be my luck? If that's my prayer book, Lord, let us pray. Well, I'm standing on a corner of Lafayette, state of Louisiana, wondering what a city boy could do to get her in a conversation, maybe drink a little red wine, dance to the music of Clifton Chenier, the king of the bayou. That was your mother, but that was your father. Before you was born, dude, when life was great. You are the burden of my generation. I sure do love you, but let's get that straight.
Well, I'm standing on the corner of Lafayette, across the street from the public, heading down to the Lone Star Cafe. Maybe get a little conversation, drink a little red wine, standing in the shadow of Clifton Chenier, dancing the night away.
Telling you, man, I saw that band live in Louisiana at a roadhouse called Jimmy's, probably in 1989, when I think I lost 5 pounds that night. I danced like an idiot. I was I had a white shirt that got so wet I literally had to take it off and wring the sweat out of it from dancing to Rockin' Dupsy and the Zydeco Twisters. Wow. Well, there's only one song left on the album. Unfortunately, it's a song that is a bit contentious right now. But there was some difference between Paul Simon and Los Lobos over who deserved writing credit on the track. But it's the song that ends the album, but with Paul Simon and Los Lobos, called All Around the World or The Myth of Fingerprints. Take care, everybody. Have a great weekend. See you next week.
Everybody knows his name. He said there's no doubt about it, it was a myth of fingerprints. I've seen them all, and man, they're all the same. Well, the sun gets weary and the sun goes down, ever since the watermelon, and the lights come up on the black pit town. Now somebody says, what's a better thing? Well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all around the world. Out in the Indian Ocean somewhere, there's a former army post, abandoned now just like the war. And there's no doubt about it, it was the myth of fingerprints. That's what that old army post was for. Well, the sun gets bloody and the sun goes down, ever since the watermelon, and the lights come up on the black pit town. Somebody said, what's a better thing to do? Well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all around the world. Over the mountain, down in the valley, lives the former talk show host. Far and wide his name was known. He said there's no doubt about it, it was the myth of fingerprints. That's why we must learn to live alone.